Salutations, folks. Another episode of Indy Cornrows Courtside. I'm Pierce Cavanaugh, joined this week by a special guest, Pacers radio voice, Mark Boyle. Mark, I'm thrilled to have you on the program. Thanks for taking the time. How you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. No question. I know you're getting ready to ramp back up with regular season just around the corner. Pacers have got the magic on Tuesday, I think. The off season for you, though, has got to be another question altogether. You got to spend a lot of time between the end of the playoffs and the start of the preseason, not doing as much as you would, I would think. What do you do in the off season? I'm sure Pacer fans are curious how you spend the rest of your time when you're not on air calling games.
Well, I try to find a lot of different things to do. I do keep up on the league during the summer, but it's not nearly as time intensive as it is during the season. And by that, I mean, I might spend an hour a day looking at various websites or keeping up with player moves and things of this nature, but it's really pretty relaxing compared to the regular season, and that leaves me a lot of time. And I try to do some traveling. I try to do some projects for charity. We've done some things in the past that have been a lot of fun. For example, 3 years ago, I walked across Indiana 500 miles to raise money for charity. I've done other people's jobs to do the same thing. I worked in a coffee shop one summer and things like that. So I try to find things that are a little bit different that will keep me engaged in a non-basketball manner. When I was a real young, well, I wasn't even a man, I would say I was a boy, a mentor of mine, a guy that I really respected, told me that if he could give me one piece of advice, and it wasn't about broadcasting, it was just about how to go about your business as an adult, it would be to don't let your job become who you are, because then when that job is over, even if it's on your own terms via retirement, then you are nothing. And I've tried to do that. So I don't spend a lot of time with sports in the summer. I like baseball, and I'll go out to Victory Field in Indianapolis, and I'll check the occasional game on television. But I more or less stay away from sports during the summer, and with the exception of the hour or so a day I talked about following the NBA, because I want to have a lot of other interests, so when it's time for me to go, I'll still be engaged.
Is that something that you found hard to do as you got more engaged into a bigger job with, say, the Pacers from when you were starting out? I mean, just the fact that it becomes more intensive, it seems like it requires more investment. How do you stop that from becoming all-encapsulating? How do you get not caught up in that?
Well, it does require a greater investment in terms of time and energy, but there's 24 hours in every day, and it doesn't require 24/7. So you budget your time. It's just like any other job, and there are a lot of jobs where you're required to put in more hours and more time than we do, and guys and gals in those jobs still manage to maintain families and other interests. So you manage your time, you budget it. It does take a lot of time to do it right. At least I believe preparation is at least as important as your actual performance, because if you don't prepare, you won't perform as well as you could. And so I do spend a lot of time, and I enjoy that process, but there's enough time in a day to find other interests and to branch out and to pay attention to things that you need to pay attention to that are really kind of easy to ignore and let slip through the cracks if you're not careful.
And Mark, the guys who know, basically just talking to people, they all have great things to say about your level of preparation. I'm sure Pacer fans listening will be familiar with how much you know in a given broadcast and how you put that forth. But how much do you look at preparation? I mean, that's something that really, when you look at everyone else around the league, if you're one of the guys at the top, that seems to be a pretty good place to be. How'd you build that?
Well, I just feel it's really important. You know, having talent is nice if you're lucky enough to have it, and that will allow you to perform at a certain level. But I look at our season as, to use an analogy, to me it's a book with 82 chapters, and I'm trying to tell the story of a season. In some seasons, of course, we have more chapters than that if we're lucky enough to go far into the playoffs. And you can't tell a story without having the information to share. So when I talk to kids who aspire to be play-by-play broadcasters at the high school and college level, guys that are just starting their careers or just formulating plans for their careers, I always tell them, you can never over-prepare, but you can over-present. In other words, if I find, and this isn't really actually literally correct, but I'll use it to make a point. If I find 50 pieces of information about a given game, then I might use five or six of them. When I started and I had those same 50 pieces of information on two high school teams or whatever it was I was doing at the time, I had spent so much time gathering the information that I was bound and determined to use all of it, and I tried to jam all of it into every broadcast. And you learn through trial and error and through repetition, and then by the time you've had enough experience, you understand that you can never have too much information, but it doesn't all need to be shared in the course of a given broadcast. And that's the way I try to look at it. I try to share information that I have contextually. For example, I'm not big on numbers, except in context. So I will rarely mention a guy's scoring average, except in context. I might say, for example, that Paul George is the Pacers' leading scorer and he's averaging 19 a game. That I might do because he is the leading scorer. But let's say that on Tuesday night, C.J. Watson scores 17 points. I would not mention that last year C.J. Watson averaged whatever it was, 5.5 points a game, unless I can put it in context and say C.J. has 17. He only averaged 5 a game last season, so you can see that he's been more productive in his first game as a Pacer. That's using numbers in context, and that's one of the things I try to do. And it helps me because I really enjoy the preparation process. I think it would be analogous to a cook who puts together a good meal. It's not just presenting the good meal that's satisfying. It's shopping for the ingredients. It's mixing the stuff, if that's what you do in a given meal. It's putting the meal together that's equally satisfying. And I know there are some guys that struggle with preparation simply because they find it too taxing and they don't enjoy it. And I do so much of it, and I try to be as extensive as possible, in large part because I do enjoy it. I don't enjoy it as much as I do the broadcast itself, but I really enjoy preparing for it, and I think that's helping.
You talk about it like being a cook. Or have there been seasons that have been more fun to put those ingredients together than others? What are some of your favorite seasons, just looking back? You've been doing this for quite a while. What have been some of your fonder memories of being the Pacers broadcaster?
Well, the whole experience has been fantastic, and I don't think I look at it in a manner that allows me to separate seasons from one another based on the team's success, because my passion is for the broadcast. I'm not a fan of the team, except to say this: I want them to win. That's where I work. I know these people. I like to see them succeed. In that context, I hope they do well. But I'm not one who gets all bent out of shape if my team loses or all elated if they win, except for the satisfaction I get out of seeing how it affects people that I like do well. So the seasons are all enjoyable for me. We haven't had any really bad ones in my time. In fact, the worst season we had with the Pacers in my time was my very first one in 88-89, and that was the year the Pacers won, I think, 28 and lost 54. We've never had any of those 15-67 or 18-64 type seasons. If we had, maybe I would see it differently. My memories, though, as a broadcaster, are just in general that it's been a great place to work, and I've been fortunate to land here, because you don't know when you start. Your goal is to get to a certain place, and you don't understand until you're lucky enough to get there that just getting to that level doesn't mean that you've got a good situation. It's really interesting, the dramatic difference in being the play-by-play guy for Team A might be compared to being the play-by-play guy for Team B. Team B might not treat their people the same way Team A does. They might not be as enjoyable to work with. The conditions might not be as good. In other words, just because you reach the major league level doesn't mean that you have what I would call a major league job. And I've been fortunate that we've had the same owners for my 26 seasons. We've only had two guys in charge of the franchise, Donnie Wallace and Larry Bird, and now they're both there together. The continuity has been really good, and it's helped me. And if you're going to ask me for individual moments or seasons, I would point to things where guys that I really liked did something that was really special. So I would look back in no particular order, because I don't rank them. I enjoyed seeing Larry Brown do well as a coach here, because I knew him a little bit when he came, and by the time he left, I felt like we were friends. And although he didn't leave on a real good note, he was the coach that turned the franchise around. And I enjoyed that because I liked Larry and felt good for him. Those kinds of things are what I look at, rather than the time the Pacers beat the Knicks in the playoffs or the time they got to the NBA Finals. Those were enjoyable moments, and it was fun to be a part of them. Don't diminish what I'm saying or don't misunderstand, please, but my moments have more to do with I like this guy, and to see him do well was really cool. Or I just like being here because they've treated me really well. My approach is not for everybody, and they've been real tolerant of the way I want to do the job. And not all franchises are like that. There are franchises that demand that you be a homer. That's not my style, and it won't work for me. And so had they done that, either they would have had to fire me or I would have left on my own, and it wouldn't have been as enjoyable. They understand that there's more than one way to do things, and I've really appreciated their flexibility and support. So it's hard for me really to ascertain this moment or that, but it's easy for me to say this has been the best 26 years I can ever imagine in a career, and it has exceeded my expectations. When you get to this level, you expect it to be good, and it's been better than I ever thought it could be, and I feel very fortunate to have been here.
It's neat to hear you talk about relationships, just because you don't think about that often, I'm sure. And just even speaking from experience as a fan who's listened to you for a long time, it's hard to distinguish the Mark Boyle who you hear on the radio 82 times a year, plus postseason and preseason, and the guy who actually travels with the team and has to deal, you know, day-to-day relationships and that sort of thing. You mentioned the Simons, who have been the Pacers owners since you've been there, and really since the franchise has been around. Is it possible the Pacer fans don't appreciate how important the Simons have been just in keeping this franchise where it is, even though it's not a particularly profitable group?
Oh, I don't think it's just possible. I think it's certain fans don't appreciate the Simons. Take a look at the way the NBA landscape is now. Last year, the Pacers had a terrific team with good guys that plays in, at least in my estimation, the best building in the NBA. Yet we're in the bottom five in attendance. There's a guy sitting there in Seattle who wants a team, who is desperate for a team, and came very close to buying the Sacramento Kings and moving up there just as recently as last season. And I can promise you this. If the Pacers didn't have owners who were as loyal to Indianapolis as the Simons are, who are as dedicated to seeing the team do well as the Simons are, different owners, I am quite certain, would be in conversation with that guy in Seattle right now. The Simons have kept this team here, and I'm not denigrating our fans. You know, people spend their money any way they want to, and they should. It's not for me to tell them to come to the game or anyone else, but the reality is that it's really disappointing when you have a team as good as this one with people manning the playing roster spots that are in the community that represent themselves and the Pacers with nothing but class, and you still can't draw fans. That's very discouraging. And the Simons, I wouldn't say don't care about that. They would like to fill that building, but their primary focus is on keeping the team in Indianapolis. And yes, to answer your question in short form, which is too late, I think it's not only possible that fans don't appreciate the Simons, I think it's certain they don't appreciate it.
What do you think that needs to be? I think it needs to change. There's some regard, because the Pacers this year are supposed to be, and we'll get to the team in a little bit, I really want to talk about this with you, but the team being as good as they are, the most preseason buzz around a Pacers squad, really since the team the year after they won the 61 games, and I'm interested to see what the attendance is going to look like. I just haven't seen the numbers there besides playoff games. What you'd expect. Can we expect Pacers to finish better than the bottom 20 in attendance this year, based on what we've seen?
Well, you would hope so. The situation is such, the confluence of factors here is such, at least to me, you've got a championship-caliber team. Now, I'm not saying you're going to win the championship, but you've got a championship-caliber team playing in, if not the best building in the NBA, a building that's certainly in the conversation, with some of the lowest ticket prices in the league. The players are great in the community and great on the floor. ESPN, the magazine, ranks the Indiana Pacers as the number one value in sports. So if you cannot fill your building on a consistent basis, given all of those factors, then it seems to me there's no conclusion except that that Indianapolis is not an NBA city. It's as simple as that. Now, what the Simons would choose to do about it would be up to them. But I don't think there's any escaping that conclusion if the Pacers can't draw at least something representative in terms of how good they are, how good the building is, how great the experience is. If you can't draw now, then you're never going to draw, and it's time to take a look at it, I would think.
I think this is a year that can be a little different, because even last year, It's too bad Mike Wells has moved on from his role in the Indianapolis Star to the Colts. He was really the only guy who you could go in and go out. Tom Lewis, of course, Indy Cornrows will throw the boss some sugar. But those two guys with the guys at 8.9 seconds, it's one newspaper and then a couple blogs who are the only guys familiar with this team and finally getting a little more exposure. I want to take you back to what you said about these guys being great dudes in the community, going out and participating. Has there been a better group in that regard that you've been around since you've been with the Pacers?
Well, I would compare this group with the group that was here through the nice run in the mid to late 90s. The guys like Antonio Davis and Reggie Miller, Dale Davis, Mark Jackson was here then. Guys like LaSalle Thompson, Sam Mitchell, Fred Hoiberg, guys that were really solid, good guys, and I've just named a few of them. There are more. This team is like that team in that they are solid people and they're really good players. And in professional sports now, that's not a combination that's easy to find. You can find good teams with questionable character, and you can find, obviously, bad teams with questionable character. You can find good guys on bad teams, but it's not the norm to find a team from 1 to 15 full of good guys who will never cause you any trouble off the court, who will never be involved in any incidents that would embarrass themselves at the franchise, and are good enough to compete for a championship. That's a rarity in sports today, and I would compare this group with the same group of guys that I mentioned back in the mid to late 90s on that regard.
I'm knocking on wood because everybody, it's great to have that kind of group around. I'm not sure anybody would have pegged Lance Stephenson as that dude before actually coming to Indiana. Has that culture just been such that it's had an effect on him? And I don't want to make this a Lance Stephenson question. I'd rather it be a culture question. But even a guy with so many red flags coming out of the draft, he comes here. He was a headache his first year by all accounts. But then he spends enough time, Brian Shaw spends some time with him. And really, by all accounts, Lance Stephenson has turned things around. And he's a totally productive member of society and this team. It's awesome.
Well, it's both of those things. The culture is part of that. When you've got a lot of guys who carry themselves professionally, who are, for lack of a better word, role models, and you're a younger guy. Lance, remember, was 19 or 20 when he came. You can't help but see that and see the way these guys go about their business. It has to influence you on some level. And then the other part of it is the player himself. And I told this to Lance when I saw him for the first time this season, how much I was impressed with how much he had changed. It's not that he was a bad guy when he came. It's that he was immature and a bit of, to use a generic term that we use around the NBA these days, he was a bit of a knucklehead. He's neither of those anymore. He's a good, solid guy. He interacts with his teammates much more effectively than he did when he was younger. And he has become a part of the culture. So, yes, the culture is part of that, but it would be wrong or at least short-sighted not to give the players some credit, too. So, I think in any situation, San Antonio is like this. The players at the top of their food chain are really solid, committed professionals. When you have guys there like Tim Duncan, who for a long time was the best player in the league and is going to the Hall of Fame, and he's your hardest worker, and the other players see that he doesn't flinch or get upset when the coach gets on him. He just goes about his business. And when the top guy on the food chain is like that, then the other guys tend to follow that example. And that's what we have here. We have guys now like Dave, who is the ultimate professional and whose impact cannot be underestimated. Guys like Roy Hibbert, who has grown nicely into his role as one of the preeminent centers in the game. And we start with those two, and we can go right on down the list. There are a lot of guys here that could be described as solid professionals who go about their business, who are committed to the project, which is winning, who, while they all have individual agendas, who doesn't, but they don't let those agendas get in the way of what's good for the group. And when the younger guys come into the mix, they have to at least notice that, and if they're smart at all, I think they take that to heart and try to follow that example.
Mark, you just created a perfect segue for me to ask you about Roy Hibbert and his relationship, not with just Tim Duncan, but the way that everybody started working. You talk about the Spurs culture. Roy Hibbert's taken to really going with Tim Duncan and developing his skills, working out with him in the offseason. I want to ask what you've seen change-wise as we move to this year. There's a picture of Roy in the offseason looking like the Incredible Hulk next to Tim Duncan. He dwarfed him. He's 7'2" and a freak of nature with, you know, the obviously that size and the strength. How much different is not just Roy, but a lot of guys on this team? Paul George is looking to make a leap. Lance Stephenson, we've already talked about. What's different about this group than the guys last year?
Well, you hope, and we don't know that yet because the games haven't started. You hope that some of these guys are young enough that they still are evolving into the players they will eventually be. I think you can definitely say that about a guy like Paul George. He's very young and just is, I think, scratching the surface of what he can do. The other guys are a little bit grayer in terms of are they going to get better or are they what they're going to be. There's a general belief in the NBA that by your fourth or fifth season, you are who you are. And you might work on things and you might try to stay there. But if you show any improvement at all, it's going to be nuanced. It's going to be maybe in an understanding of the game or using your experience and intelligence more than you did when you didn't have either of those when you were younger. So the other guys, to me, are in grayer areas. David West, for example, is what he's going to be. He's an older player, and that's plenty good enough. But is George Hill going to get better? Is Roy Hibbert going to get better? There's a list of guys like that who will play key roles. Is Lance Stephenson going to get better? And part of the premise, I think, at least in terms of those who think the Pacers are going to compete for a championship, is that not only are there obvious changes, the bench has been upgraded dramatically, for example, but what about these kinds of potential changes? It's a relatively young team, except for David West. Are those guys going to get better, or are they who they are? Are they what they're going to be? And that's it for them in terms of their ceiling or their improvement. That's one of the interesting things I think that we'll find out as the season wears along.
I thought Roy answered some of those questions in the playoffs in a way that I wasn't necessarily expecting. I'd always hoped that Roy Hibbert could be someone you can throw out for 35 minutes a night who can get you 15-10 with a block or two. But he hadn't really shown that over an extended period because he never got the minutes in the regular season. Postseason was a different story. I'm not even talking about the Heat series, but he did big things against the Hawks and the Nets. Not the Knicks. What am I doing? Putting up 15-10. I mean, he was really consistent. Is that the real Roy Hibbert? Is that a guy we can expect to see produce at that level this year?
Well, we'll find out. You know, he was fantastic in the playoffs. And it's very exciting if you're a fan to look at that and say, this guy's not that old. And typically centers progress slower than other players. Maybe he's just scratching the surface of what he can do. Now, we look at the preseason, which really I think is not an accurate measure for anything, but it's all we have since the playoffs. I thought he played really well in Dallas in the last preseason game, but other than that, he didn't look effective at all. But it's the preseason. The minutes are different. The rotations are different. It's hard to say. Last season, he struggled badly for about two-thirds of the season on the offensive end. Defensively, he was terrific the whole way. Finally started to get it together around the All-Star break, and then, like you said, he was outstanding in the playoffs. So if he can perform at a high level all season long, then this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Those that think the Pacers can compete for the championship, I think, are maybe not assuming this is going to happen, but I think they think there's a likelihood that Roy Hibbert is the Roy Hibbert we saw in the playoffs, that Paul George will emerge to the next level. He's already a darn good player. Can he become the superstar that many assume all NBA teams need to win a championship? Some think it's at least possible, maybe even probable. And that's the kind of question that has to be addressed over a period of time, over an 82-game schedule. But there's certainly reason to believe that the Roy we saw in the playoffs would be the same guy that we could see starting Tuesday night.
It's easy, though, for Pacer fans to get caught up in all that national hype, all the people who didn't watch the team all year, only watched them in the series against the Knicks and the Heat, where Roy Hibbert was putting up 20-10s and Paul George was going head-to-head with Melo and LeBron, and the entire regular season, it was a different story. Paul wasn't nearly as effective. Roy had that wrist, and I'm hoping that that's going to be a thing of the past, but Paul George really struggled with turnovers. Now, he's looked great this preseason. I want to know what you think about him.
Well, he struggled with turnovers in the preseason, too, and he's going to struggle with a couple of things that every player who's trying to make the jump that he's making struggles with until they figure it out or until they become comfortable, and those are two things. Too many turnovers because you're trying to do things that you just can't do, but it's all trial and error. You need to find out what you can't do, and the only way to find that out is to try it. And then he'll struggle with shot selection, as all great scorers do. That's just part of the package. And unless it becomes an alarming issue, it's not anything to be concerned about. So he's going to take bad shots. He's going to turn the ball over. You hope that the bad shots are kept at a minimum, and the same with the turnovers. And I think the more experience he gets, the more you'll find that to be true, because he's still learning what he can do. You point out that he wasn't a great player last season. He showed flashes of it, and he was pretty good in the playoffs, but his talent is overwhelming. Now, how will he use that talent? I can tell you this, he's a really hard worker, and he's committed to being great, and those are important things, but you still have to go through the process. He's not been the main guy yet, although last year he was close. This year he will be unquestionably the main guy, although you might see them go to David West late in games and things like that. They're still a team by committee because they haven't had the elite player, and as Paul gets closer to being that elite player, maybe they'll change, at least in a nuanced way, their approach or the way they attack, especially late in games. But Paul is going to be fun to watch because he's still going through that process, and I'm sure there are going to be nights where he puts up a 4-for-17 with 12 bad shots and turns the ball over six times. That's part of the growth process. But to have a player that's capable of doing those things is exciting because really, and I include Reggie Miller in this, Reggie was a great shooter and a great clutch player, but he was never a superstar. This guy's got a chance to be the franchise's first superstar, and it's pretty exciting.
The first time I heard you say that, my ears perked up. I can't even remember what game it was. It might have been a contest against Detroit early in the season, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe mid-year. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. You think he could be that good?
I do, and I've thought so since he came. In fact, I recall making those kinds of statements even when he was a rookie and not getting a whole lot of playing time. You can just see his talent. It's so overwhelming, and it's at both ends. He's a great defender. There's not much he can't do on the offensive end. He's improved his ball handling. He'll improve his decision-making. And it's exciting because those kinds of players haven't been in this franchise, at least not in my time. And it's fun to have one to watch. And it's fun to watch a guy who's a really good young man evolve into a key figure or even a face of the franchise type figure. Now, this is a guy that hasn't gotten a lot of publicity, but just last week, he bought out all the tickets at Fresno State's building, their home building, for their home opener on November the 16th, so people in Fresno could go watch for free. That's the kind of things that this guy does that tells you what kind of a person he is. So he's not just a great player, but he's a great guy, too, and that's really cool.
And he's still growing, maybe literally. I think is he really 6'10"? Is he legit 6'10" now?
I doubt that. Is that what they list him at?
They list him at 6'8", and there's this buzz last year that he grew during the season and that he's 6'9 or 6'10".
Well, I'm not always the best judge of that. He looks about the same to me in terms of height, but he's only 22 years old, so I suppose in theory he could be getting taller. What's the difference, really? He's a great player who can play multiple positions, whether he's 6'8", 9", or 10". So, I guess it's fun to talk about, but I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, it's just weird because he seems like one of those guys, if he was 6'6", that he'd be a really good player, but he's got the extra 2 or 3 inches. You look at him guarding Durant, and their length is similar. He talked about this in an ESPN deal about how he and Durant have the kind of skills that kind of cancel each other out, not putting himself in that level, obviously not yet, but that was interesting to hear you talk about. Really quick, I want to switch gears here because I know you got to go soon. The bench, you mentioned earlier as something that they improved massively. What have you seen from those guys this preseason?
I think they'll be solid, and I think Frank will mix and match them a little bit more than he did last season rather than playing them as a unit. But we'll see how that plays out. I think if you look at the additions, they're obvious. C.J. Watson is an upgrade over D.J. Augustine, and Luis Scola is a dramatic upgrade over Tyler Hansbrough.
You said it, not me.
Not that those guys weren't decent players, but the reality is that the Pacer bench was one of the worst in the league last year. So upgrades were necessary, and Watson has had success in Chicago and Brooklyn. Scola has been a really solid pro for a long time with Houston and Phoenix, and those are good additions. Chris Copeland's a wild card. He had a real nice rookie season with New York, struggled with his shot in the preseason, and he's more or less a one-trick pony. He's a three-point shooter, and if he's not shooting that at a high percentage, then I'm sure Frank will hand out his minutes accordingly. But if he shoots it like he did last year, over 40% in New York, then he's a big asset. And as I said earlier, just because he didn't do it in the preseason, I tend not to take too much out of the preseason in terms of judging guys and what they might be able to do, because the circumstances are so different than regular season games. But in theory, he's an upgrade. The other two are certainly upgrades. And then I think you're going to see some nice things from Solomon Hill, too, who's a rookie, a four-year guy. And when I say four-year guy, I mean he went to school for 4 years, and he's much more polished than some of the younger guys that we've seen come through here in the past. And he's not flashy. I don't mean to indicate that I think he's going to be a great player, but I think he'll be a solid contributor, too. So the bench is good. The starting unit was already one of the better in the league. And then if you throw Granger into the mix, who was only there for five games last year, now you can see why everyone thinks this is a legitimate championship contender.
Is it too soon to worry about Danny? I know that it's preseason and all that, but this is a guy who hasn't really played meaningful minutes since a playoff series last year against the Heat, and already he's getting shut down with a different lower body injury, but still a lower body injury. I worry about the guys who don't have the chance to condition their legs after, you know, Danny misses all that time with a knee. He's got a calf. Does that lead to a thigh, lead to an ankle? All this stuff seems that like it can pile up pretty quick. I'm a little worried about him.
Yeah, I understand that. And you're talking about biomechanics, which I know nothing about. So I'm not qualified to answer that. But in general, if you have a player you're counting on and he's injured, then of course you'd be concerned. But I think you need to put it into context. And I say this with all due respect to Danny Granger, who is a really good player and has been an excellent player at times during his course with the Pacers. This is not Derrick Rose going down. And these guys know that they almost won a conference championship without him last year. They know they're better. They know they're good. And they'd love to have him. Don't misunderstand. I think everybody would be very excited if he could play 60 or 65 games and come up with something that they didn't have last year. But I still feel they're very confident that they can win without him. And so nobody's going to panic. Nobody's going to force him back in. He's not going to force himself back in. It'll happen or it won't. And if it does, it's a big bonus, and I think that's really how everybody's looking at it.
All right, Mark, last question before I let you go. I've talked to some of the guys around the team who just have a chance to interact with a few of the guys in the front office in different areas, and it seems like there's a different vibe with these guys. Frank Vogel sounds really confident that he has a team that he has wanted since coming, you know, to the head job in Indiana. He thinks he's got the best group in the NBA. He thinks he can win a title with this team. Is there a different feel from these guys coming into training camp to the preseason that you've noticed as opposed to last year or 2 years ago?
It's a little different, not dramatically different. I think they felt pretty good last year, but nobody knew how good they were. And Frank's always been very upbeat. So that's consistent with his approach. When he first came and he took over a team that was barely good enough to make the playoffs, he was upbeat. Now, these 3 years later, when he's coaching a team that's good enough to compete for a championship, he's the same upbeat guy. So I haven't noticed a lot different from him. But there's a quiet confidence in the group there. It was there at the end of last season, and then they made the nice playoff run. You know, you always see teams at the beginning of a season, and there's always optimism, because they don't all think they're going to win the championship, but they all think they're better than you think they are. And then as time unfolds and you get into January and February, and it turns out that some of these teams not only aren't better than you thought they were, they're worse than you thought they were. And then the individual agendas come into play, and it can be a long, long winter in some of these places. That's not the vibe here. This is a championship caliber team. They know that. They feel good about it. They're not going to get too bent out of shape if they lose a couple of games in a row or if they start off 7-4. They know it's a long road, and they know what really matters is getting to the playoffs, getting as high a seed as you can, and then be at the top of your game when you get to April, May, and June. So they're very professional in that manner, and you can see that's how they're approaching their business. But they were pretty confident last year, too, and I haven't noticed a great deal of difference.
I know I just said last question, but you reminded me of something that I don't think I've heard anybody ask in terms of just coaches, coach speak wise. Frank Vogel is a different cat than a lot of guys around the NBA. Does he compare to anybody you've seen with the Pacers or anywhere else around the league? Does he remind you of anyone? And how underrated is he as a coach, in your opinion?
Well, he doesn't remind me of anyone. We've had a whole bunch of different guys come through here with different methods. And coaching is like anything else. There's more than one way to get the job done. And his way is a little bit different than a lot of people's. And I will tell you this, I was really surprised when he took over and how upbeat and positive he was. Not because he's not an upbeat, positive guy, he is. But his coaching mentor was Jim O'Brien. Jim brought him to the University of Kentucky as a video coordinator. Jim got him jobs in Philadelphia and Boston. Jim brought him here. Frank is sharp enough to have taken the best of Jim O'Brien and left the rest of it behind, because Jim was old school, and his reinforcement was almost always negative. He browbeat guys, and that worked for him in certain cases. He got a team to the conference finals in Boston, for example. But with this group of guys, many of whom aren't here anymore, but with the group that Frank inherited, that approach had become tiresome and wearying, and the players weren't responding. But knowing that Jim was Frank's mentor, I wondered when he took over if he would approach it the same way. And he's 180 degrees different. In fact, I think he was so aware of the negative feel toward Jim that he sometimes went almost too far with the positive vibe. But as he's gotten more experience and gotten a better feel for being a head coach and become more comfortable with it and his role in that job, I think he's balanced it out very nicely. And I don't think he's underrated, because I think around the association now, everybody thinks highly of him and knows what he can do. The casual fan might underrate him because he's not a household name. He's not Greg Popovich. He's not Doc Rivers and so forth. But I think within the circle, within the NBA group, whether it's Sacramento or Miami or Minneapolis, those people in those franchises, I think, know what a good coach Frank Vogel is. And so from that standpoint, no, I don't think he's underrated.
I'm just glad to see him getting love. Mark, I want to thank you again for coming on. I know that the season is kicking off on a Tuesday night. Anything to plug beyond the normal radio broadcasts? Anything else you want to make fans aware of?
No, not really. The opener is Tuesday. You've already touched on that. And then the first weekend game is the second. And I think it's against Cleveland, which is a Saturday night. Interesting. I'll give you an interesting anecdote on that. Mike Brown is coaching the Cavaliers. And I don't know the specifics of this, but he told me when we were in Cleveland last week that his son Elijah is playing for Butler now. And he said he would be able to go to the shoot-around on the second at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, check out of the hotel, and then go to Butler and watch his son play. I think they're playing one of those exhibition games maybe that precede the college season. You'd have to check and see. But what I'm telling you is, if you really want a day of basketball, you could probably come to our game at night and go see Mike Brown over at Hinkle Fieldhouse Saturday afternoon.
Well, if anybody really has major interest in following Mike Brown around, I'm sure that they'll be able to use that information accordingly. Mark,
yeah, I've just encouraged a whole group of stalkers now.
Mike Brown stalkers there. A nice demographic. We have several demographics who listen to the show, Mark. I'm sure Mike Brown stalkers are chief among them, and you've just encouraged them. Thanks for that.
No doubt.
Awesome, Mark. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully we get the chance to do this a little later in the season once we get a feeling for what this team looks like. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks a bunch.
Anytime. It was my pleasure.
Awesome. Again, that's Mark Boyle calling in from Pacers Radio Network. You can catch that game on Tuesday. Like we said, that's all the time we got. For Mark Boyle, Pierce Cavanaugh saying so long, travel well. Until we meet again, Pacer fans, thanks for listening.